Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the Calcio Land podcast of the week. So we've had an amazing string of guests, a lot of variety, great interviews. But today we want to focus on our listeners who have been sending in a lot of great questions. So today is going to be more of a mailbag type podcast. We're going to answer a lot of transfer questions. There are some Serie A, a couple of pop culture ones. We're also going to have game picks from our friend Thousand Names after the opening segment. But before we get to all that, I am joined by our great friend, the producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So we're recording this on Thursday. Higuain was moved to Chelsea, was made official yesterday. Piontek as well. And you know, Alex, when I was watching Milan's game on Monday, and that was the one where you already knew Higuain was basically gone. It wasn't official. He hadn't been selected. Milan put in really quite an impressive performance, especially in the second half. So I tweeted this, and it made me think that Milan could be a candidate for what is known in the U.S. Sports lexicon as the Ewing theory. So I know, Alex, you're big into hoops, U.S. sports. So I want to ask you, do you know what the Ewing theory is?
I do, David. I definitely do because, man, 90s hoops, 90s NBA, that is my bread and butter. I was certainly not a Knicks fan, but correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, you're a huge Bill Simmons fan, and I know this is where it stems from. But the Ewing theory, David, is more simply the team loses their best player through either maybe injury or trade, and maybe everybody thinks the team's going to take a step back, but in actual reality, the team does just as well, if not better. Is that what it is? And if I'm going to stretch it here, who also do you think the Ewing theory applies to in Serie A?
So you're very close. That is almost all the elements. So the Ewing theory is about Patrick Ewing. For those not familiar with the NBA, he was the signature player on the Knicks in the 90s. You know, very good player, but the Knicks never won anything with him. They came pretty close. So yeah, so it's a team loses their best player and they do just fine. The other element is that the team had actually never won with that guy, and then they start winning maybe even trophies or whatnot. And this is, yeah, Bill Simmons brought it up to the lexicon. I don't think he came up with it. I think it was one of his readers that came up with this theory and sent it to him on a mailbag. And it's called the Ewing theory because the one season, this is the last time the Knicks were actually good. They went to the NBA Finals after Ewing had suffered an injury. And, you know, they lost to the Spurs. I don't think it was ever really close, but they really looked like they had transcended. So to be a real Ewing theory, you must have never won anything with said player. He's clearly the best player on your team, and inexplicably, they do better. And this person that sent the theory had done some research that on the games that Ewing was out here or there, the Knicks were actually quite good. And then they put the theory to the test once, you know, the Knicks went on the playoffs and Ewing was out. And this theory took off, and you're familiar with this, Alex, because of the Patriots. When Drew Bledsoe, who was the longtime quarterback of the Pats, suffered an injury, Brady, who was his backup and was like a six-round pick, it's not like the Patriots knew that this guy was going to be amazing. And then they won their first Super Bowl with Brady, who was his backup. And the only reason he was playing was because Bledsoe was out with the injury. So that theory took off. We've seen it time and time again in U.S. sports. And I have to say, Milan might be a contender for this because, of course, Higuain was their signature player. He arrived. Granted, he was there for a short amount of time. Highest paid player on the team. And, you know, Milan just looked quite better without him against Genoa. Just a much more fluid team. So if you're a Milan fan, I think there's some rather intriguing Ewing theory potential for them, even too with some of the other moves that they've been doing, which we'll get to in a second. So Milanisti, look this up. If you're into sports, I think this is a pretty fascinating theory. We kind of gave you the down low on it, but there's a lot more to it if you want to Google it. So now, before we get to all the questions on the transfers that we got from our listeners, Sedia's back. We have some Sedia matches coming up this weekend. Some actually really intriguing ones. So by now, you guys know the drill. Our Oracle Thousand Names sends me the picks on three matches. I know which game he's going to pick, and I know his picks, but he's the one that decides which matches we pick. And on Monday, I have to say, not only did I see Milan win, making me think about the Ewing theory, but after we recorded during the Juve-Chievo match, Ronaldo actually missed the penalty. And I really, really enjoyed seeing many of our listeners tweeting Thousand Names about it. And then I got an even bigger chuckle when Allegri, after the match, mentioned that Ronaldo had also missed the penalty in practice that same morning. So Thousand Names, it took you a while, but you struck gold with them. So without further ado, let's get 2,000 Names picks. And there's some really good games this weekend. We're going to start with Napoli, who is traveling to San Siro to play against Milan. And Thousand Names has Napoli winning 2-0 with goals by Insigne and Koulibaly. And he says the return of these two champions, they were out suspended, makes Ancelotti sing in his former stadium. And the other comic is he says Piatek's going to be a disaster and that Milan's transfer window is ridiculous. So I'm going to keep going with the Ewing theory. Not going to give Milan a win, but I'm going to give them a hard-fought draw. I'm going to have it 1-1. I'm going to give a goal to Suso, who did score with his right foot on Monday. And I'll give a goal to Milik, who's been on absolute fire. I'll read to you the prediction from Thousand Names in Italian. Milan-Napoli 0-2, Insigne Koulibaly, il rientro dei due campioni fa cantare Ancelotti nel suo ex stadio, Piatek disastroso, mercato ridicolo, fidatevi. Then we have a very intriguing match. We have Atalanta at home against Roma. Now, Atalanta, and we've been tweeting some interesting stats on them on the Calcio Land. They have a great goal differential. It's also driven by the fact that in the past two matches that they've had, they scored 11 goals. Really impressive. They're going to face Roma at home. And I think Roma's been really good, but their defense is pretty shaky. So let's see what Thousand Names has. He has Atalanta, Roma 0-2, Roma winning, goal by Dzeko and Schick. He says that Gasperini is going to do turnover with since his mind's already on the Coppa Italia match against Juve and he wants to make history there. And that he says Di Francesco is going to win thanks to De Rossi's return, and De Rossi was rehabbing during the winter break. So that should be a good boost for Roma. So in Italian, Atalanta-Roma 0-2, Dzeko Schick, Gasperini fa turnover con la testa alla Coppa Italia per fare storia contro la Juve. Di Francesco vince grazie al ritorno di De Rossi. So this is a really intriguing match. Atalanta's on fire, so is Roma. I would say these are two of the most informed teams in Serie A. I'm gonna say they're gonna cancel each other out. I'm gonna have it 1-1. I'm gonna give Zapata another goal. He's been on absolute fire, and I'm gonna give another goal to Al-Sharawi, who right now leads Roma in goals. Last match, and this is another intriguing one. We have Juve traveling to the Olimpico Stadium to face Lazio. Thousand Names has Lazio winning 2-1. He has Chiellini scoring for Juve and a brace from Radu. Ronaldo sbaglia rigore. I don't think I have to translate that anymore for you guys. He says Simone Inzaghi is going to win his first match against a top team this season. He says Cristiano's mind, he's too busy thinking about his issues with the taxes and the rape case in the U.S. He says Juve players are going to have a crisis of nerves and that Allegri's getting ready for the elimination in the Coppa Italia. And another signature from Thousand, he puts Godazzo, which is very hard to translate. I think that means he's really excited by this. Now, I think you guys have figured out by now he isn't called Thousand Names for no reason if you follow him on Twitter. And if you are learning Italian or know Italian, I can't recommend it enough. That account, Thousand, cracks me up. On Twitter right now, he's a Juve fan. With our predictions, not so much. So in Italian, Lazio, Juve 2-1, Chiellini, doppietta Radu, Ronaldo sbaglia rigore, Simone Inzaghi vince per la prima volta uno scontro diretto, Cristiano con la testa al fisco e al caso stupro. Giocatore in crisi di nervi, Allegri si prepara all'eliminazione in Coppa Italia, sgodazzo, fidatevi. I'm going to have this as a draw. I know it's a little bit boring. Lazio actually really needs to start keeping up with the other teams. Like, this is actually a very intriguing weekend for the race for the Champions League. because Milan's playing Napoli, Atalanta, Roma, who both are kind of in this race, place each other. So Lazio, this is a pretty tough one, but I'm going to actually go with a 0-0 draw here. So let's see how we go with those. Before we get to our Twitter questions, I want to give a shout out to our great friends at BioCBD. This is a product Alex and I have been talking a lot about on the podcast, both products, Alex, that you and I use. They come in very different forms. This is completely legal. You get a lot of benefits from it. I'm going to say, you know, one thing that I've been using more and more recently are the pill form of it, because it's very good for inflammation. Not only does it have very pure CBD, it also has turmeric, which is another anti-inflammatory. It also has, it's good for diets and whatnot. So it's a product that works in a lot of different ways. So I really recommend it. If you like the product, we're going to tweet their link on the CalcioLand account. Definitely use it. We do have a discount code, CalcioLand15. Any other ways, Alex, that you've been using it that you want to tell our listeners about?
Yeah, absolutely, David. I'm glad you mentioned the capsules. I mean, all three of their products that I use definitely help with inflammation. I actually, you already tied in Drew Bledsoe and Tom Brady once in this. I was thinking to myself, how is a 41-year-old quarterback the best in the NFL? And don't worry, I'm not going to talk about too much NFL. But he makes sure to not have any inflammation. And I'm not sure if he uses CBD, but I know he does everything possible to not have inflammation. And boy, do these products from BioCBD Plus really help with inflammation. But then another thing, I had once said on an episode that I had a headache, and I put the topical oil on my forehead, on my temples, and it helped. But I actually realized, even without a headache, if I'm just trying to get relaxed at night, sure, the pen will help, the capsules can help, they can really make you feel relaxed and de-stress. But actually, by putting a little topical oil on my forehead without a headache, I instantly kind of soothed into the night and I felt really, really relaxed. So it just doesn't treat things. It also prevents things and really just gives you a great relaxed feeling. And who doesn't need that? So David, we've said it many times before. These are our friends at BioCBD Plus. So it's BioCBDPlus.com. And in order to get 15% off all of their products, use our discount code CalcioLand15, CalcioLand15, all lowercase, at BioCBDPlus.com. As David always says, this is something we both use and really love.
Okay, so now let's get to the meat and potatoes of today's podcast. And these are the questions from our listeners. As always, you can send us questions. Please always include the CalcioLand hashtag. It just makes it much easier for me to find these. So we got a lot of questions on transfers. Of course, you know, the transfer window closes next week. You can send us questions on Serie A. We also love the pop culture ones as well. So which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start off with this hot one. Are there any legs to the rumors linking Alan to PSG?
So this is one that we've talked on the podcast a little bit. There's definitely a lot of legs to this one. And, you know, we talked about how PSG has been in the market for Alan ever since they faced them in the Champions League. And he had two great performances against them. So there's definitely legs there. There's also a very strong relationship between Napoli and PSG. They did the Cavani deal, Lavezzi deal in the past. De Laurentiis is close to PSG's management. So there's definitely legs there. Napoli wants a very high price for Alan. It sounds like they want close to 100 million for them. And look, you know, we're big fans of Alan on this podcast. We've said for a while, he's definitely in the conversation for best midfielder in Serie A. Maybe not talent-wise, but performance-wise. Like, very consistent, great box-to-box midfielder, can do a lot of things to the table. But he's also 28. And I think, you know, if you can get anything over 80 million or 100 million, considering especially the depth Napoli has in the midfield, you should consider it. You know, the other thing, too, is, you know, maybe selling Alan makes it a little bit easier for Napoli to keep Koulibaly. Although this also, if you're someone who wants Koulibaly, and Lord knows I get a lot of questions on it, this could also be the blueprint on how this could potentially happen, because it seems Alan's very tempted by PSG's offer. They really want to increase his wages a lot for Napoli. So I have to say, at first, this struck me as maybe just a ploy to get him a raise from Napoli, but now I'm not so sure. Now, the other factor in this is PSG is also heavily linked to part of this. And L'Equipe, who is pretty reliable in France, they have part of this to PSG as a done deal. I'm not sure if they're going to get both, especially because of their financial fair play situation. So let's keep monitoring this one. Again, we're recording this Thursday, early afternoon in Boston. So let's see what happens. But there's definitely some legs to it. And Carlo Alvino, who follows Napoli very closely, one of the most plugged in people, this morning tweeted that he thinks this deal is going to happen and that Alan's going to be soon cleaning out his locker. So definitely one to monitor.
I'll say it again. If Alan goes to PSG, I'm taking them way more seriously. That's for sure. All right, next Twitter question. David, with the Forlan transfer gaining traction, how does that fit into Napoli's plans for Alan, Barella, Raj, and Diarra?
So the other factor in this is, look, you know, you lose a player like Alan, who we mentioned one of the best players in his role, I think, in all of Europe. That's a tough loss for any club. But the silver lining is Napoli is just great at finding midfielders. Fabian Ruiz was amazing. You can't really say they miss Jorginho, and granted, they're playing a different style, somewhat different style than when Jorginho was there. But if you're Napoli, you know, if you can get so much for Alan, and yeah, it's a tough loss, but you also know you're great at replacing him, not out of the question. So Forlan could be one of the players that comes in to help for that. I barely watched him, so I really don't know how that fits with that. He does have an exit clause. They are negotiating. It seems he's more of a target for the summer, but if Alan leaves in January, that could gain some traction. We also know Napoli have been the front runners for Barella. Again, this seems more feasible in the summer, but today Cagliari signed this midfielder from South America, Oliva, who arrived from Nacional. And interestingly, on Di Marzio's site, and take that for what it's worth, every time they describe Oliva on the Italian side, they bring up that he looks like Barella. So who knows? Maybe there are some breadcrumbs there that you may want to follow. The other one is Raj has been linked to a move on loan. He had been linked to Parma. It looks like it might be a move to Spain. I think Sevilla on a loan with option to buy. Let's see there. Diarra had been linked to Milan and clubs in the Premier League, but I think De Laurentiis, the Alan thing, I don't see him selling both, but he wants a huge return for Diarra as well. I thought he was pretty good in Napoli's last match against Lazio, but overall, I'm not sure he's played well enough to meet Napoli's valuation. So a lot going on with Napoli's midfield, but I just go back to the fact if you're a Napoli fan, I think you should definitely have faith in the club's ability to keep finding midfielders, because I think they're as good as it gets in Serie A with that.
Yeah, Fabian Ruiz is a great get. So, David, here's a good one. I'm confused by Milan's ability to pay for Piontek in one installment. How does this fit with their FFP requirements?
So I know Di Marzio has been saying it on his show that he really can't remember many times that an Italian club was able to pay a transfer fee of $35 million in one installment. And look, most transfers happen in multi-year installments. They pay a substantial transfer fee over multiple years. But I think it came down to Milan with Genoa. They were haggling over potential players going in the deal. There didn't seem to be a fit. So Milan was like, you know what? To make up for that, we're just going to pay up front for Piontek. And look, the Elliott Fund has money. We know that. They're loaded. They got Paqueta. They spent a lot of money on him. So I think they just wanted to get the deal done with Genoa and said, okay, we can't agree on players. We're just going to give you the money up front. As far as how it fits for financial fair play, I need to do a little bit more digging on it. But I think how Milan's going to be able to justify this one is they are saving so much on the wages for Higuain in the short term. And the financial fair play issues for Milan are having a balanced budget over the next 3 years, and gross wages and amortization of transfer fees both impact that. And if you look just at Higuain alone, Higuain's wages before taxes gross were around $18 million a season. Piontek is $5 million a season. I think he makes a little bit over $2 million net. So I think Milan right there, if they have to justify this transaction, I think they can do it that way. Now, I'm not 100% sure Milan can make the case that over the course of the life of Higuain's stay at Milan, when he was there on loan with option to buy, how that works. But I think the case they're going to make is how much they're saving in wages with Higuain. And by the way, too, I've seen a lot of tweets on you know, Milan paying $18 million for the loan of Higuain. As far as I know, I've been told by someone, not Di Marzio, but someone very familiar with the negotiation, that Chelsea is paying half of that. While we're on the subject, and I wanted to mention at the top, I found very interesting yesterday the official announcements for the Higuain deal, the one that Chelsea and Juve mentioned. I'm not surprised that Chelsea just talked about a loan with the potential to extend it. And Marina said, hey, you know, we're curious to see how Higuain does this half season and beyond. Juve, on the other hand, was much more specific, and they're a publicly traded company. They were like, yep, Chelsea has the option to either extend the loan one season if certain parameters are met, or to buy him outright over 2 years. I had predicted that if this deal ever happened, it would be pretty similar to the Cuadrado deal, multi-year loan. I came pretty close. That's kind of what it is. The only difference is there's no forced option to buy. I think that was a win for Chelsea to kind of saving face, because we know how reticent they are to spend players over 30. So if you're intrigued by all the transfer talk on Calcioland, I love getting the feedback on that. Just look at the difference in the statement between Chelsea and Juve. Really quite interesting.
Very interesting. In fact, my Chelsea Twitter timeline was really just celebrating the fact that Higuain had finally arrived, but nobody was really talking about the terms of the actual deal. So it'll be really interesting to monitor how he does for the rest of the season. All right, David, next Twitter question. Is Rodrigo De Paul a good addition for Inter?
So Inter's been heavily linked to De Paul for a while. He's been at Udinese, got off to an amazing start of the season. He was on our winners and losers segment pretty consistently for a stretch. He was a one-man wrecking crew for Udinese. Slowed down a little bit. Quality player, came from Argentina with an impressive pedigree. So, you know, is it a good deal? It looks pretty likely that he'll join Inter in the summer. I'll say more than pretty likely. It seems like he's Inter's player to lose. So here's the deal, and I'm very consistent with this. I said this about Juve with Ramsey, Sean, and whatnot. To me, you know, when I look at when a team makes an addition, I ask myself, could this guy start for the teams that are ahead of the team he's joining? So to give you an example, Inter has to look at players that are good enough to start, say, for Juve, Napoli to a certain extent. And look, De Vrij, I definitely think, falls in that category. Nainggolan, on paper, did. He hasn't lived up to that. But, you know, on paper, he was. So is De Paul fall in that category good enough for Napoli and Juve? I don't think so. So it's a good move, I think, to consolidate what Inter has. Could he maybe be as good an addition as Politano, who has been quite good, maybe slightly better? So, yeah, it's a good addition, but I don't think he really moves the needle. So, to me, it helps them maybe consolidate a third place. So you have to ask yourself, is that good enough for depth, or is Inter better off saving that money, using that money and throwing in more money or players to get someone better? So that's kind of the way I look at it. Good deal. Yeah, maybe great deal, maybe not. And that's how I think we should start looking at transfers, not so much in a vacuum, but how much does this move the needle for the team in the standings?
All right, David, here's one. How would Belotti fit at Roma? And is there a better and more realistic alternative to him?
So there's been a lot of buzz on Belotti. He was linked to West Ham last week. We talked about it on the podcast on Monday, been linked to Roma. And look, Belotti's been a little bit better this season. You look at his goal totals, it looks pretty good, but I want to say half his goals have come off penalties. He has pretty good work rate. Torino's not going to sell him. I would say right now they're asking for 60, 70 million. Maybe in the summer they still look for 50. Is that a good investment for Roma? I'm not so sure. I just don't think he really moves the needle. I've said it before. If I was Roma and I was looking for a long-term replacement for Dzeko, I would be all over Duvan Zapata, who I think not only he's been scoring at a ridiculous rate, but brings a lot of, you know, what Dzeko does, open spaces, strong physical striker. That would be the one, if I'm Roma, to go all in. I actually think Zapata and Schick complement each other pretty intriguingly, different style of strikers. And, you know, as we'll get to in a second, Roma and Atalanta have a very good relationship. So I'm still skeptical on Belotti. Look, I really hope he proves me wrong, because right now there's a lot of positive stuff for the Italian national team. They do miss that great striker, but Belotti had that one season where he looked he could be that player. But as of now, he doesn't strike me as a good investment for Roma.
Zapata's a great shout for Roma, and I just feel like because he's 27 and not 24, you just hear less about him. But really, he's succeeding in the league, and 27 is right in someone's prime. So you would think that'd be a more logical and more talked about rumor. So, David, how about this? Could Roma sign Atalanta center back Mancini in January, and how good is he?
So there's been some buzz on Roma, and it looks pretty likely that they'll get him in the summer. Hopefully for Roma, they bring him in to be Manolas' partner because Fazio's been really bad, but or he could be Manolas' replacement. I'm not sure they'll be able to get him in January, because Atalanta needs him. They've been in a tight race for Europa League, and maybe they can get into the Champions League race as well. So you also wonder if Atalanta wants to help reinforce Roma, but they have a great relationship. They did the Cristante deal, which for a while looked bad, and now actually looks like quite a good deal for them. So let's see what happens. My gut tells me this is more likely in the summer. This could also be like kind of the Caldara deal where, you know, a club gets the deal done and they, like Juve did, and then they left him there. And the same could happen here. And actually, Caldara is a pretty good comp to Mancini because Caldara used to score a lot of goals as well. Mancini's the center back that has the most goals in Serie A. So I have to tell you, I've watched a good amount of Atalanta, but I wonder if maybe Mancini's a little bit overrated defensively because he scores so many goals. But don't take my word for it. I'd have to do a little bit more research on that. I'm actually looking to do an interview on Atalanta because they're definitely a club to look at. So intriguing move, but I think Mancini more likely in the summer. And let's hope for Roma's sake that it isn't to replace Manolas, but rather to complement him.
All right, David, staying on Atalanta. Thoughts on Atalanta's chances to clinch a Europa League spot?
They've been on fire. There's no doubt about it. But look, Serie A is pretty stacked this season. I think we can give Juve and Napoli definitely Champions League spots. I think Inter in pretty good shape. Not great, pretty good shape. So then we're fighting over the next Champions League spot. And then there's the two Europa League spots. So it really comes down to Roma, Lazio, Milan, Atalanta, Dark Horse, Sampdoria, kind of for those positions. Atalanta's on fire right now, and they do have, they're actually not the youngest team right now compared to Atalanta's standards. They are pretty solid, but they really seem to be hitting their stride. So let's see how this Roma match goes. I'll have a better gauge on what we think they can do after that. But this has been a really nice turnaround for Atalanta because if you remember, they got off to a very slow start after being eliminated in the Europa League.
Yeah, I actually just tweeted out today from the Calcioland account how different Atalanta have been away versus home. Away, they're third in Serie A in terms of points. But home, they are way worse. They're 11th in Serie A. So, man, if they could just get a little bit better at home, who knows what that could do for their standing. All right, David, next Twitter question. Juventus lacks a world-class midfielder. Who do you think they can sign to fill this void, and will they add a midfielder in January?
Well, we talked on Monday about the Lyon midfielder Ndombele, who Di Marzio linked to Juve on Friday, saying that Juve have been in touch with his agent to set the groundwork for the summer. And I think that could potentially be that you've watched them a lot more than I. You've written glowingly about him. Just by the Twitter reaction I've been receiving on the links, it seems a lot of Premier League players, fans would love to have him on their team. So he could maybe be that player. And, you know, I've talked about it. Like, I think Sean and Ramsey, very nice players. Do they move the needle? Could those guys start for Barcelona, the Real Madrids, like the clubs that Juve is competing for a Champions League spot? That remains to be seen. Probably not, but maybe this player could. As far as January, I'm not sure they'll be able to add anyone. I think they'll make an attempt to get Ramsey again. I know a few people have been tweeting, hey, why don't Juve offer Benatia, who is pushing to leave Juve? And that's an intriguing situation right now. You know, why don't they flip Benatia to bring Ramsey right away? On paper, that's a good idea. But Benatia is really pushing to go play for this club in Qatar because they're offering him a huge salary. So this is an interesting situation for Juve, too. because I think they need Benatia for the rest of the season if they want to make a push for the Champions League, because I think he's a better defender than Bonucci. I think they need an alternative to Bonucci. And look, Rugani has been pretty good this season, but Allegri doesn't trust him in big matches. Like, he usually starts against really the bottom of the table. I don't think Allegri's ever really used him in a big Champions League match. So pretty intriguing situation what happens there. I think Juve long-term as Benatia's replacement, they've pegged Genoa as Romero to come. But I'm not sure, and I don't think they can get him in January if he's ready to fill that void. So interesting situation for Juve, but I don't see them using Benatia to get Ramsey in January. I have a feeling they're going to stay put with the midfield that they have for this season and then try to get Ndombele in the summer.
All right, next Twitter question. Pellegrini, De Frel, Acerbi, and now Politano. What will it take for Berardi to get paroled out of Sassuolo?
This was a question from one of our favorite listeners, prisoner of the moment. Well, the answer is simple. Had Berardi wanted to leave Sassuolo, he would have left a while ago. Juve tried a bunch of times to bring him back. He didn't want to move. He's had, you know, he's a pretty peculiar type player. So I think it really comes down to him. I've said that, you know, it's very possible that he's in the mold of Di Natale. And, you know, he was great up until 2-3 years ago, great player where you could say, oh, maybe he could be the great bomber delle provinciali. You know, still an above average player for a mid to lower table team. But I think it really came down to him not wanting to leave. Some people just like being, you know, a big fish in a small pond. Maybe that changes in the summer, but that's really the main reason why he hasn't left.
All right, David, how about this? What are your thoughts on Gabbiadini returning to Sampdoria?
Intriguing move, because we've seen a lot of strikers do very well at Sampdoria. You know, not just Quagliarella, but we saw Schick make a name for himself. Muriel did very well at Sampdoria as well. So an intriguing move. I'm curious to see how he could fit playing next to Quagliarella. Gabbiadini is pretty versatile, can be a central striker, also play on the wing. So I think this is an intriguing move. And again, Sampdoria, a lot of players have really shined in that system. Gianpaolo, kind of a Sarri disciple in style, could get a lot out of him. So I think it's a good move by Sampdoria and a good move for him to kind of relaunch his career.
All right, David, let's move away from football. This one makes me chuckle. I don't know why. What are your thoughts on this era of mumble rap?
You're probably chuckling because old man Dave, you probably know how I feel about this. So I'm going to keep this kind of diplomatic. Our friend Aaron West, who we've had on the podcast a few times a while back, tweeted about this, you know, about old guys like me complaining about the new rap and younger people not really liking the rap that I'm into. You know, I'm into like Wu-Tang Clan, Biggie, Tupac, like that sort of rap. Like Wu-Tang is definitely my favorite. So very different. But what Aaron said, it's like, you know, different eras respond to different things. It's not a matter of what's better. It's just respecting that some people like a style and other. The mumble thing definitely isn't my cup of tea. I don't listen to it that often, but, you know, sometimes I do. So yeah, I'm going to be diplomatic and say, you know, if you're a young guy and you like it, great. Good for you. It's not for me. What about you, Alex? Do you like this style of rap?
I'll be honest, it's really not my favorite, especially when it's just the hardcore mumbling. I kind of like the in-between, the new rappers or newer rappers, not your 90s rappers, but that really have the old school feel. So some of my rappers are Kendrick Lamar, who I definitely think gets respect from many people way back in the day, the old school hip-hop fans. J. Cole, another guy who really has kind of that old school sound. And David, I know you like these guys, Run the Jewels, who are definitely real lyricists and real rappers. And when I say that, I don't mean any offense to people who do like mumble rap. It really is to each their own, but those are really kind of my favorites. If I can't understand what they're saying, it really is not for me. So, David, how about this? I really enjoyed the ending to Bohemian Rhapsody. What are some of your favorite endings to movies?
Yeah, so there's been a lot in the news on Bohemian Rhapsody, on their director. Bryan Singer has been involved with a lot of like harassment cases. You know, what's interesting about the Oscars, and we'll get to it in a second, that there's really like campaigns for movies. And I feel like rival studios and people who are promoting a movie like really leak stuff to the media with the timing through the awards. So very interesting. And on Bohemian Rhapsody, real quick, like on the ending, You know, that movie's been criticized a lot for how they changed the order of songs and Queen and events and all. But I kind of understand why they did it. They really wanted the Live Aid. And this is our listeners referring to the ending, like Live Aid being the tail end on that. It made sense that they would change the order of events to really make that resonate. So I agree. I thought that was a very good ending to the movie because it really showed Freddie Mercury at his peak. Now, as far as my favorite endings for movies, I was really thinking, you know, what are the endings that were like really like, oh, crap moments that left my jaw drop? And, you know, there's a couple. I know younger people might remember the Sixth Sense ending, which was pretty shocking to a lot of people. I don't think many people saw that coming. I think Nolan is known for having great endings to his movie that make your jaw drop, like the twist at the end. Some of my favorite in The Prestige, there's a great twist at the end. I know the Inception one was pretty left wide open, but it was a very suspenseful ending there. And even his first movie, which not a lot of people have seen, The Following, there is a pretty jaw-dropping moment. As far like more old school, the original Planet of the Apes. And look, I'm old, but I'm not so old that, you know, that movie came out before I was born. So the original one with Charlton Heston, the ending in that one, you know, really shocking when I was a kid. Like, I still remember exactly where I was when that happened. But there are, you know, some more subtle endings, maybe not so much jaw-dropping, but that I think are great endings to the movie. And I've been on a big Godfather kick, and I want to have a lot of thoughts on what's better between Godfather 1 and 2, and we'll get into that in an upcoming episode. I think the ending of Godfather 1 is perfect when Michael becomes the new Don and they close the door on his wife, Kay, really to prove that she'll never be fully part of the family. It's very well played. It's just a perfect ending to that movie. And another one that I really enjoyed is the ending to Fight Club. And that's, you know, the movie that Brad Pitt and Ed Norton were. Really, really good ending. Also, the use of music. It has a famous song from the Pixies, Where Is My Mind, with all the buildings with the credit reports crumbling. Just very well played. Maybe not so much shocking, but just a really beautiful ending. Great use of a song, and I really like that. And the final one that I want to mention is the Coen brothers. They have this movie called The Serious Man, which is more of their minor movies, not one of their big hits, like, say, Fargo, No Country for Old Men. But that has a final image that's just incredibly haunting. So those are kind of my favorite endings to movie. I'm curious to hear from our listeners any others that you guys like. So tweet us in response to the link to this podcast.
All right, David, last Twitter question. This just came out a couple of days ago. What are your takeaways from the Oscar nominations?
So I think a lot of the movies that have been getting a lot of momentum got a lot of nominations. Roma did really well, which I'm thrilled. That's so far my favorite movie of the ones that I've seen. Green Book, which I know you've seen, Alex. I have yet to see it. Got a lot of nominations, getting a lot of positive momentum there that did well. The one movie that didn't do as well as people expected was A Star Is Born. And I think especially Bradley Cooper not getting a nomination for Best Director, I would say that was probably the biggest surprise. This movie in black and red, this Polish movie, the director of that movie basically got his nod. The other ones were pretty obvious. Cuarón from Roma was going to get it. Spike Lee was going to get it. The director of The Favorite, also a movie that got a lot of nominations that I really enjoyed. That was surprising. And the last one was Ethan Hawke, who had a lot of momentum for being nominated for Best Actor for First Reformed, which was a great performance by him. I would say those were the big upset. So pretty intriguing. I've seen almost all the movies nominated. I have to watch Green Book and Black Klansman. But I actually think this was a very solid year for movies. I'm glad to see Black Panther got a lot of nominations, despite coming out a lot earlier in the year. I actually think it's probably much helped by being on Netflix now, and Oprah's been really pushing for it. So an exciting time for movies. We'll definitely do an Oscar special as it gets closer. So I want to close by thanking our listeners for your support. Today we did a mailbag. Both Alex and I were talking about what great questions we received today. You guys are basically co-writers of the show with me, so I want to thank you for that. Also want to thank you for the fact that you promote our podcast. This is completely Strictly Three podcast. We put a lot of time and effort in this, so please help us grow by promoting it. And I want to thank those who left reviews recently on iTunes. We got some really nice ones recently. I read them all. If you leave feedback, constructive feedback, we usually implement it. So keep that coming. And thanks for your support. And we look forward to chatting with you next week.